So does that mean that kind of like the style was blended in as a metaphor for
Yes,
some of the
exactly.
phases? Got it. That's awesome.
Absolutely. So, for example, the accessories are the experts that you need to have to help support you in business. They're not a part of the suit, but they enhance the suit.
What if story is the answer to our crises of meaning and belonging, to our impulse to heal our lives and help others, to our desire and drive to leave this world better than we found it? Now, we love good stories. In fact, we're kind of obsessed, not just with the stories themselves, but with the stories behind the stories. Their oddly perfect timing, the healing process they provoke in their authors, and their capacity to catalyze individual and collective change. And we love exploring these with writers, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, healers, parents, and others. Tune in to hear these stories behind the stories and entertain with us the real possibility that whether you are a teller or a consumer, story is always offering or leading us to an answer. For 10 years, Janice Graham, who's the president of Small Business Style Inc. and Entrepreneurs Insurance Services, searched for a way to make the very challenging topic of business succession digestible and even fun for the business owner she wanted to serve. Tune in to hear how Janice used story and some of her favorite real-life characters to make the book fun to write and easy to read. You'll hear how she combined two of her passions to make industry-specific content easy for readers to understand. And you'll even hear how she helped me and a few of my team members avoid some of the risk we didn't see in our businesses. It's time. Go grab a cup of something delicious and enjoy these sips of story insanity with us. Welcome to Sips of Story Insanity, where we talk about the stories behind the stories with authors, speakers, thought leaders, healers, parents, and more. My team, son Aaron,
Hi.
sister Alyssa,
Hi.
and clients turned friends turned team members, Teddy,
Hi, y'all.
Lori,
Hey, everyone.
and Carlin
Hello.
are here. They're all here to help me make sure that we get the most delicious sips of story insanity out of this experience. And it's going to be a whole lot of story insanity with Janice today. She is the president of Small Business Style Inc. and Entrepreneurs Insurance Services. She's a speaker and now a best-selling author of Leaving in Style: Business Succession on Your Terms. She helps business owners and entrepreneurs better understand the nuances of long-term business succession planning to protect the future of their families, businesses, and employees. Welcome, Denise.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited. We're doing this right after the launch of the long-awaited book.
Yes, I am still coming down.
I bet you are. It was a big climb.
It was.
And I'm so sorry I missed the event. I was on the road and I couldn't even sign in because our Wi-Fi was terrible, but I heard it was amazing.
It
So
was amazing.
good. Well, I want to go back to the beginning. When did you start thinking about writing a book? What inspired even the idea? Because I know we've been talking about it for years, but I suspect it was back there even before we met.
It was almost probably even a decade before. It started with a life event, prior to the year 2000. Well, actually, I'll go even further. I started in this industry, financial services, 26 years ago. And I started my own practice 22 years ago. And right at the beginning of my practice, at about 21 years ago or so, my mother had a very dear friend who was a very successful in business, and she made that phone call, that fateful phone call that you get, and you know what it sounds like when you hear that voice, and you're going, what? Something's going to happen. And she asked, are you driving? You know, all those questions you ask someone before you drop the bad news. Mm-hmm. And she told me that Peyton had crashed his plane. And this is a gentleman who had a son that lived up north. He would fly down, fly up and down and pick him up. He just, fortunately, he had just dropped off his 12-year-old son and was heading back and didn't make it. So it was a moment in my life where I was very familiar with retirement planning, but I was really curious as to what was going to happen to this business. And I just started asking questions and no one knew anything. And then I started asking some of my colleagues and mentors in my industry, and I would get these peppered answers, and or they would ask me questions like, did he have life insurance? I don't know. What does that have to do with business? But I would ask. Didn't have the life insurance. Did he have a buy-sell agreement? I don't know. What is that? So I started to realize that there was this entire place and space that business owners knew nothing about. I didn't know about it. And I felt like if I need to learn, and I did, I traveled the country taking classes and learning, what if I can help others? So I made a shift in my practice from retirement plans, setting up retirement plans and that type of business to educating business owners. So that was the beginning. And from there came that push from the friends in my world that I love so dearly.
I wasn't one of them, but we have a mutual friend who some people have intuitive powers and they see spirits and they see, you know, Ursula looks at people and she sees books. Like,
yes. And it was like, you need to write a book. People need to know this. And so there began the journey. So I started it with a recognized problem or hole. And then I began like, okay, I have to figure out this whole book thing. So that put me at about 10 years ago, nine, 10 years ago.
Yeah. And I feel like we used to, because I used to live in Southern California. So we used to see each other at all the networking meetings. And I just remember seeing you and you being like, I know I'm going to get to it someday. And I'm like, it's fine whenever you get to it. Like, I wasn't the person, but I know Ursula was always there, even if she wasn't there. Right.
You have to check and see if there's a footprint on my back. You know? It still might be there. And then I can rub it off. Now it's like, oh, it's done.
Yeah. But you know, one of the things that I see regularly with people who want to write books is there's usually some sort of something that comes up when they get the inspiration. The creative process has this, you know, beautiful, frustrating, messy, sometimes really challenging way of getting us ready for the process of actually writing it. So what were some of those things that came up for you as you were thinking about it? Like, oh, I'm going to call Amanda and start working on this. And then something would happen. Like, what were some of those things?
Well, one of the reasons why I even got into financial services was because I didn't understand it. My husband, who was my boyfriend back then, had mutual funds and he would talk about these investments. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I had a 401k. I was working in telecommunications, but that was because my friend Tony told me to do it. I had no idea what I was doing. And I found that when people would meet me out networking, because I was in sales even back then, they would, you know, have a meeting and they would look at what I had and they would say, oh, you're doing fine. Well, I didn't know what fine meant. You know, obviously it meant that they couldn't figure out what to sell me. I don't know. I didn't know what fine meant. And, you know, when my oldest daughter was born, I had a friend that came out and she sold me life insurance. I had no idea what I had. And every month I would call her and go, what is this again? How does it work? And she would explain it to me, but it was explained to me more in like insurance terms and insurance ease. And I'm like, okay, I got it. And then about a month later, I'm like, what is this again? I just didn't, you know, I didn't know what it was. So when I got into the industry of financial services, one of my commitments was to really understand it. And then when I started my own practice, my goal was to speak English. So the challenge was, how do you write a book about stuff you've learned and try to make it palatable for the consumers, for the world? So that was my first challenge and my biggest challenge.
Yeah. So, I mean, when we're thinking about this, because this is one of the big things, especially when you know that normally when you talk to people, they look at you like you're speaking an entirely different language. Yeah. Right? Like, we've all kind of been there. And I think that's just the nature of people who want to change the world with the message is we're doing it because we're a little bit further ahead, which makes it hard because we have more information or a new paradigm or something that registers for people like a dog whistle. You know, they just kind of look at you like your mouth is moving. Yeah. And I think there's probably something important coming out of it. And so what were some of the ways that you thought about doing this for a while? Like, what were some of the potentials that you were looking at?
Well, I thought about taking the information and creating it in a format that was more tutorial. Like, no, that doesn't sound like fun. Then, you know, it's like, you know, I thought about creating it in a way that looks like most business books. And it's like, well, that doesn't sound like fun. Then I said, okay, I'm going to try to make it a conversation. And I did that, but that didn't turn out so well. So at this point, as I sit here, I should really tell you all, I wrote two books. Because the first one that I thought was done was more of a conversation, but it was a conversation with at a level that was still too high. It was just too complex. And the way that I like to explain this entire space is that in my industry, as we learn about succession and exit planning, the classes that we take and the people that we engage with are in a space that they call advanced planning. So if we consider it and call it advanced planning, what do you think a business owner is going to call it? Overwhelming. It's over their head. So the first iteration was still a little bit overwhelming. And the lovely Amanda said, you know, I'm a small business owner and I got a lot out of what you've written, but it's over my head. So I said, you know, okay, Amanda, if it's over your head, it's wrong. So that was, I mean, that first go around was nonfiction, try to make it flow, and it still wasn't flowing because it wasn't reaching my ideal audience. And that's small business owners. I mean, there are some folks who are, if you have a $30, $40, $50 million and above business, there are plenty of people around to help you and to want to help you and to engage and bring all of the tools that you need. But the reality is that you can have a $1 million business, you could have a $500,000 business. And the reality is that the outcome is gonna be the same. We're all gonna leave our business. So why not make it where someone can actually be introduced to a concept and make it palatable?
Yeah.
That was it.
So the big turning point was when Janice and I started to talk about some of her other passions. I was like, I forget what it was. I had asked you something, like you were talking about headshots that you'd just taken, and you like got all into this outfit that you were wearing. And I was like, tell me more about this fashion thing. So where did that come from?
It's so funny. It's just divine. It was a divine download. It was a very subtle way of actually merging my worlds. I can't tell you this for sure, but this is what my grandmother said, and I believe her. I started sewing when I was 6 years old. My grandmother was a sewer. My mother used to design for a fashion troupe. That was her hobby. She worked at Xerox, but she did the fashion and fashion shows on the weekends. So I grew up in a place and space around fabrics and clothes and fashion and modeling. And so when it came time to go to college, my original plan was to be an OBGYN, but then back then they were being sued out of business. I'm like, who wants to do that? So I fell back on what I knew and what was in my heart, which was fashion. So I went to school and I have a fashion degree. It's for the business side of the fashion industry. I did not want to go for fashion design. I actually wanted to be a menswear buyer. I love menswear. I still love menswear. So I have this degree in fashion. And when you start going into the world of business, I'm not going to say there's not a place for it, but it's especially in financial services, it really does not come up. That is just not something that comes up. So when we started having this conversation and you start hearing me talk about an outfit, I get really excited because it's not for the superficial, it's probably for the passion that comes from within. And it was just a great opportunity for me to merge what I already know and love with what I already know and love. And that's how we ended up with this really unique place and space and this book that's an outlier.
Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, succession planning with a fashion twist is like never seen it before. One of the things that came up, I know we talked about it at the beginning because you had an archetype that was based on an actual human that we both know. Actually, Teddy knows too. It was like,
yes,
this brilliant woman. And so, you know, we used her kind of as the business owner that you really love working with, wanted to work with, want to work with more. But I wondered, and we wondered together at the beginning, like, what's going to happen to all the men? Because your primary focus is women, right? Like, these are the entrepreneurs that you generally work with. Yes. But men need this conversation too. But this was just one of the things that we talked about when we talk about looking at your market and how should you really niche and should you niche. And when we were talking with Janice over this, I was like, I think we really need to niche. One, because of the fashion piece.
Right.
And two, because of your network. Like all the places where you have your toes in the waters with entrepreneurs, primarily female, right?
Actually, I have a lot of men because I get referred men and I work in a very male dominated space, but I recognize the need to serve women. And this is how I look at it. When you look at any book on business, regardless of what the cover is or what the content is, actually a lot of them are written by men. And it doesn't stop women. It doesn't stop us from picking up the book and buying it. You know, Who Moved My Cheese was a man. You know, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, men. Almost all of them are men. But it does not stop us from seeking out the information that we want. But it's funny how it works the other way around. If it's a book with a woman focus, how guys go, oh, this is a chick flick, you know, this is a, this is a woman's book. It's like, no, it's a business book. And I wanted to intentionally create a voice for women because I read, you know, I'm a researcher. And I probably bought 10 books on exit and succession planning. And as I read them, every single case study was on a man in business, 100% of them. I have nothing against men. I like men. But it's like we as women we find our way into that space and we will gather the information we need to move on. So it's like, why don't we just kind of go ahead and make a woman? Why don't we make the voice of a woman? And of course, yes, the individual, my muse that came to mind, it was easy. You know, it's like, this is a place and space and someone I know who I had actually interviewed for the first iteration of the book as well. And it just all kind of started to fall into place and I could start working around a character that I was familiar with.
Yeah. So you get into the writing process. We figured out how it's going to go, how it's going to be a little bit easier, how we're really going to speak the language of women in a way, like blending a language for women of like, how do we dress the part, right? Like this woman in the book is operating in a man's world in her industry. And so has all of the pressure of like showing up in that space really powerfully. And what is one of the biggest concerns? Like how we physically show up, right? Like, absolutely. Do I wear the power suit? Do I keep, you know, I don't want it to be too soft. I don't, all of those considerations. So we figured all of that out and then we get into the writing process. So what was that like for you?
Wow, that was actually very fun because I am a 100% huge fan of nonfiction. I mean, most of what I read is nonfiction. And then prior to really getting into this second version of the book, I was a part of a book club that read fiction. It was all fiction. And I didn't enjoy it because I like nonfiction. But then I really realized that I learned how to just use the imagination and to start to explore the concepts and thoughts that you can do and say anything when you create a fictionalized character. Now, a lot of the stories are peppered in, are, you know, based on real stories, but it was a little exciting. It's like, I get to kind of make this what I want. She can be who I want her to be. And originally she had a business partner. But I do have clarity in market. I understand the importance of target marketing and having that dog whistle and that voice that others hear. So I said, no, she's not going to have this gentleman as her business partner because I didn't want his voice to be louder than her voice. So, you know, he became an employee. Isn't that fun? You could just do that. I mean, I had a ball. I was like, I get to make them whoever I want them to be. Now, it just reminded me of playing with Barbie. You just pick and choose, you know, let's go to the pool. It was really in my head, that kind of fun, like, wow, this is really going to allow for me to tap into my creative side because I think I use both sides of the brain pretty evenly. I'm pretty creative, but I've been in this very analytical, technical space for a very long time. So that was fun.
Yeah. And it was fun to watch you just like, okay, what are they wearing during these meetings? You know, like the financial piece, like we get all that, that information's going in there, but let's get creative about where are they meeting and how are they dressed and what are they drinking, right? The specialty drinks in the lounge. And
well, that's where you come in. I mean, it's like when you start asking those kind of questions, Amanda, it just really allowed for me to just kind of, you know, just wherever that part of the brain, when you look up and imagine, I was just there. So that was really cool.
Yeah, it's really fun.
I have a question about that though. Like how did the blend of business and fashion to kind of actually manifest in the book? Cause like, I can't see it, you know, other than, oh, they're kind of separate. Like, but I can't imagine that they are separate, right? Is it part of the message in some way, like blended?
Not so much the message, but more so the environment. So you, when you're visualizing, for example, one of my readers, which is this lovely young man, he lives in Washington. And he said, I saw my wife and what she goes through to get ready for a big event, you know, making sure the right undergarments, making sure the shoes match. So the fashion part of it came into just putting color into the environment for a conversation that is not so much colorful, but we wanted to make it interesting. So it's almost like adding a scent so you could smell while you're engaging and in indulging in information to kind of might lighten the load a little bit.
Yeah, so I can I say something? Yeah. I read the book for several times because I was helping to edit and all that, but so I know what y'all are talking about, but our listeners have no idea what this book is made of or how it's, can we go into that just a little bit before we, in other words, it's a fictional book you're coaching someone through this process, and you used accessories, dress, suit, all as part of the things that she needed to look at. So that's how the outfit came to be. The power suit was one thing, the accessories, the yes. So there's each chapter is a something to do with the outfit.
Yeah. So does that mean that kind of like the style was blended in as a metaphor?
Yes,
for some of the phases? Got it. That's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for example, the accessories are the experts that you need to have to help support you in business. They're not a part of the suit, but they enhance the suit.
And then we have like personal style, leadership style, you know, all of those things that Aaron is in the process of, you know, one of the reasons why he was like, what are we talking about today? I'm like, you need to be there, because Aaron is, we're getting ready to start this publishing company. And he's on the inside making sure that everything works, right? Like he's the architect of how this all. So one of the first things that they do in the book is do an assessment. What are the risks, right? What are the great things that are happening? What are the risks? How do we mitigate those? Because at some point, the boss is going to need to leave. And it would be great if the boss could sell this. It needs to be in good shape to be sold. And so, you know, having this piece of having people be able to see something that we do every day, dress ourselves for success. Well, not me. I'm usually like, let's be honest. I used to, though. I used to like all the networking. No, but this idea that like this thing that we do every day, bringing that kind of that level of attention to the metaphor of what are the accessories in your business? What about the shoes and how are you stepping into the next phase? And what is your personal leadership style and how can you bake that into the culture? But also leave space for the next leader who might not have that same exact style to come in and still succeed and not implode the business. So all of those things got kind of cooked into this really cool conversation between two women who, of course, you know, the way that it starts out is they're at a conference at this beautiful resort that now I have to go to because she does such a good job of making me want to be there.
It's beautiful.
And they're at a conference and, you know, this woman Grace is out in the crowd and she's listening to Janice talk on stage and realizes like, okay, she has something that I need because she's panicked because her friend, her sister actually in the book passed away and left a business falling apart and the impact on the employees and all of these people. So it was this really cool way of connecting with the reader at a point where it's like, yeah, just like me, and I bet a bunch of our audience members who are building enterprises, like we're so busy in the process of delivering and building that when people say to us, so like, what happens if there's an emergency? I don't know. I cannot think about that. The emergency is all the stuff on my desk right now. That's the emergency, right? No.
That's what they think.
Yeah.
And a thought beyond that is overwhelming. So by taking the analogies and the metaphors and kind of peppering, it gives you an anchor to something that you can kind of relate to, you know, all the way to the review, which we use as a mirror, you know, review, you view, you know. So by adding and using those metaphors, the goal is to take something that is oftentimes overwhelming for business owners and have it anchor, and you can walk away and go, oh, yeah. I remember that part. I remember the composure to really have a sense of what it feels like. We're engaging a feeling into a thought.
Yeah. So what's been the response from your readers? Like, what are they saying? You had a whole bunch of people pick up the book last week, but I know you had readers before then. So,
yes. You know, And everyone who's told me they purchased it, I go, I would love to hear your thoughts, because the response that I've gotten is just absolutely wonderful. I'm just really pleased. I have wonderful men in my life and in my world, and a lot of my room last week was men. When I have men saying, you know, one of my readers said, I didn't really care for the analogies. And I go, it's like, why? He goes, it's kind of girly. And now he's been in my industry for 40 years, so that gives you a clue. And I said, well, you know, I asked, you know, would your wife, I said her name, I said, would she enjoy it? He's like, yeah, she would enjoy it. I said, perfect. And he said, the story was good. And that's what I'm hearing. They like the story. I've had business owners that have exited their businesses. They bought like 10 copies each, going, I'm going to be passing this out. Everybody needs this. That just does my heart so much good. I have some of my colleagues that have purchased, and they were like, one of them recruits in the industry. He goes, I'm giving this to every woman that I work with. And it's like, you know, it's men or women, I don't care. But when you have clarity of market, it will show up where it's supposed to show up. And I liken it to a Happy Meal. McDonald's is not going to change their marketing because I decide I want to buy a Happy Meal. Then I go, ooh, let's go for the silver-haired people now. No, they're going to continue to market to children, and they're going to let anyone who wants to buy that Happy Meal buy it. Same with this book. It's like my core, my target are serving women business owners, but I'm happy to serve anyone. But when you speak to everyone, you speak to no one. So the response that they're really good. I actually got an email with someone that goes, oh my gosh, you're one of the characters. I was like, yes, she's tall and slender, isn't she? So, you know, it's, I don't know if my husband's going to read it. He did buy it and he asked me to sign it. So I would be curious to those who are really close to hear what they have to say, but mm-hmm. What the response I'm getting is that it is an easy read and it's very enjoyable. It took a very difficult topic and made it very palatable.
Yeah. I'd love to hear from you, Lori, because you were one of our readers and you're also someone who I don't even have four businesses you're running, right? So like, this is a big conversation for you around planning for the future and having family be part of business. And so yeah. What were your thoughts about it?
Well, I loved it. I really enjoyed it. Congratulations on $1,000. That's awesome. It really made me stop and think. We actually now are down to three businesses. We sold one this last Thursday. That was a great investment. Wasn't one that we had planned on, you know, holding on to for a long time, didn't have a lot of employees. So didn't quite fit the same picture. But our other three businesses, one of them's been in the family for 43 years. My husband and his dad built it together from the ground up. And now my son is involved. And, you know, so it really gave me, especially, I would say the biggest aha moment I had was the perspective on like spouses and girlfriends and boyfriends and things, how if that doesn't work out so well, that they can end up, because of the laws in the states now, if they live together, you know, a lot of them, they're considered married, you know, and so they can go through that divorce, you know, process, and you can take part of that company from you. And that was like, oh my goodness, you know, that was a real eye-opener for me, because I'm like, okay, we need to prep the kids. We need to make them aware that this can be a big deal, and it can change the whole outlook, because depending on what, you know, portion they would end up in, they could really have some influence. And really want to change the vision and the way the business is headed. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I think you did a great job. And it, like I said, it was very eye-opening to me.
Beautiful, thank you.
You're welcome.
You know, it's interesting that part of it. There's a part where Amanda says, this chapter is way too long. It's like, that's my favorite part. when we're going through the D days. And those, some of the feedback I got from my industry was that I was sharing too much. It's just, you're sharing too much. You're not giving the business owner the opportunity to use their imagination. And I had to think about it for a second and go, that is when you know something so well, you assume others know it and they don't. They don't have an imagination because they don't know what they don't know. You know, so we talked about it and we decided, and as met one of the, another reader, when the questionnaire is what was one of the most important parts for a business owner, that was the most important section. And that's the section you're referring to. So I left it in because there's no such thing as sharing too much. Why don't we give the business owners the basic information so that when they start talking to their advisors, they have a clue. So we can educate them, and as they work, they can master a place in a space because it's like layering it onto something that they understand. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. It almost, because we do have business advisors that we've been working with for a couple of years now, which was another huge step that you take when you bring all those people on. And I love the way you talk about that in the book as well. But it gave me some ideas. Like you say, like Amanda mentioned at the very beginning, we don't know what we don't know. And we're too busy putting out the hottest fire. And the hottest fire is usually whatever is, you know, right in front of us and making the most noise, right? So I would have never, until that situation happened and occurred, I would have never thought about some of those concepts, you know, those ideas that you brought up, those points. And so I really appreciated the list, you know, that you have in there that gives us those ideas and those things to watch for. And it was like brainstorming. So I didn't take it as too much. I looked at it as, oh, well, then what about this? Right. And I actually went to my husband, like, well, if this is the case, what do we do if, you know, or when? And so I really thought that was awesome to have those in there because it allowed me to not focus on that hottest fire, but to have like some concepts and some ideas of jump off points, so to speak.
Beautiful. Perfect.
Yeah. And Carlin, you've actually been through the process. This is as we are recording this, you are completing the last little bit of time at this place that you sold. So I know you haven't read the book yet, but this conversation, like, were you privy to a lot of this information before you were thinking about selling? Like, at what point did you start really thinking about these sorts of things?
Sure. Well, you know what this is bringing up for me, which is so interesting, I haven't thought about this in a long time, is when we were getting ready to buy the business. So I worked at this company for about 7 years. The owner at the time was moving and asked if I wanted to buy it. And in the beginning, I was like, I don't want it. It seems too complicated, but some partners and I got together and we decided we were going to do it. So we had all these meetings about what's it going to look like? Who's going to own what part? Who's going to be responsible for what? But then we got into these conversations where there were all these like contingencies. Okay, well, what happens if one partner wants to get out? What happens if something happens to one of the partners? And I just remember having so much anxiety. And at one point kind of, I probably was crying and blurted out like, I feel like we're just talking about all the worst case scenarios ever. And why are we doing this? And it was so enlightening to have two people in the partnership who had owned and sold businesses in the past saying, we have to talk about this because there is going to be a time when we're either going to sell this business or something's going to happen and the business is going to dissolve or whatever. We actually need to talk about in this scenario. But that had literally never occurred to me. Like you were saying, Amanda, like it didn't, this was all about buying a business, my brain was nowhere near what would happen if we were going to sell it. It wasn't even in my universe. So it was such an eye-opening experience, and it was scary. Like, these were scary conversations mm-hmm. to have, because they were, what if somebody dies?
Right.
What if somebody gets a divorce? What if somebody doesn't want to be in this anymore? And they were emotional, but yet they had to be had. So that's what this is reminding me of. I'm like, man, I have not thought about this in so long. And then when we sold, and you know, and that's exactly what we did. It was about 12, 13 years later, we sold. And my husband, who ran the business side of the business, had done, you know, he'd been through this before. So I think he kind of knew some of the things that we had to take into consideration and plan for. I didn't. So I, you know, he was, you know, confident and, I mean, very busy, a little stressed, but moving it forward. And I'm on the sideline, just emotional and afraid, because I didn't know until we were kind of in it and through it how important all of these considerations were. And for me, I think the biggest part was about the succession of the culture I had worked really hard to build within the company. Like, I really got that the people who were coming in, who we sold to, were going to come in with their own processes and protocols and, you know, guidelines. And I got that. I was really committed to preserving as much as I could be involved in the, like, heart of the company. So that, like, that to me was the main thing that that kind of had my attention. Is I knew I was selling, and there was going to be a point where I was no longer in charge of all of these things, but I wanted, like, the heart of it to stay as much as it could. So there was a lot of planning around that. And yes, Amanda, tomorrow actually is my final almost 25 years in this one company is my final closing chapter. I'm going to stay on for about 6 weeks on the sideline, just as on call, just in case something comes up and there's an errant question or a little bit of help needed. But yeah, tomorrow is my final day.
Wow. Yeah. And I'm just so grateful. You know, I think about the timing of Denise, like, oh yeah, I'll write the book eventually, you know, and I'm hearing people say, Amanda, you should be thinking about, you know, selling your business someday, and you should be creating a business plan so that you can. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm helping people write books. Who's going to want a company? Who's going to want this company? Who's going to have, the same superpowers that I have, because I never met anyone like me. You know, I mean, like, these were all of the objections that were going on in my head. And here we are, freaking 8-9 years later. And what are we doing, y'all? This is what's happening. Like, you know, the thing is expanding, and we're having the conversation around, like, okay, what is it going to look like with the partnership? And what's, you know, all of these conversations are in the works. And it is, Carlin, I'm really glad that you brought that up, like, the emotional piece of it, because in the book, I really appreciated how, you know, the main character, Grace, is emotional because she has, for two reasons. One, she just watched her sister pass and watched the fallout happen as a result, because there was no plan in place. But secondly, because this is a family-owned business that she loves, and she loves all of the employees, and she, you know, and if you know the person who this person is patterned after, it's like, I mean, I'm probably more connected than any other reader would be, because this is the type of person that she was, like, or is, you know, just deeply in love with all the people that she's leading and loves the company. And it's like this baby, this, you know, and I'm having that experience of taking something that I've built and then figuring out how to share it and spread it out between people and put systems in place so that things that need to get done when I'm not there. Like, it sounds so silly to say it out loud like that, but it's because it's not mental, it's emotional. It is an emotional thing when you build something from the ground up, or even maybe take something over and refine it and turn it into something that you love. This conversation is like,
and it's very emotional, Amanda. And it's so emotional that people shut down. I mean, you know, just like she was saying, like, you know, you cry. If you don't know what to do with those emotions or how to channel them, they just kind of get stuffed. Mm-hmm. You know, fortunately, you had, there are, you know, experienced business owners that were part of the process that can kind of guide you. But and there's the tough conversations mm-hmm. that no one wants to have. Mm-hmm. So they just go, we'll just put those in a little chest over here and we'll get to those later.
Right.
You know,
but it's like, you know, I took care of my grandma up to the time that she passed. And we had all those conversations about her. And it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, you're planning for the end of something and no one wants to talk about that. But the thing is that having, you know, been on the other side of a few of those types of deaths, it's like, when those conversations don't get had, then nobody gets to actually have the grief process when it's over, because they're, right, putting out all the fires, dealing with the huge. So
if you don't have the conversation, it doesn't change the facts. It's going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so you may as well have the conversation. You know, when I talk to people, and they, years ago when I first started working with the public and someone didn't know how to do a process, they're like, I told my kids I'm going to die in this chair. Well, you might. You might. That doesn't change the fact that the business around you will still need to be dealt with. Or if something happens to me, I told them to push me off the pier. Well, that's illegal. But those are the types of things that people would say to avoid, because they don't know. They don't know what they don't know. So it's like, it's this emotion. I can't deal mm-hmm. with this emotion. So I'm going to crack a joke about it and move on. It's like, no, you know, and it's not always about death. It's about disability. You know, you could have a, God forbid, you could have a heart attack, a stroke. It could be anything. And so I always say, if you plan for the best and expect the best, that's where you fall short. But if you plan for the worst, and like Carly, like Carlin's like, you know, you have the tears, but you plan for the worst and expect the best, then you're covered. All your bases are covered.
And yeah. You know, that was probably one of the most helpful responses we had. I mean, it was so visceral. I like literally remember the office we were sitting in and where everyone was sitting, because I was about to lose my mind. But one of the people said, like, they were so reassuring and basically said what you just said, like, we have to have these conversations. These are not meant to be upsetting, like, and it's totally normal that this, because yes. nobody wants to talk about this stuff, but like, this is okay. We actually have to have these, and that it's okay that it's like really emotional and everyone's freaking out right now. And you know what ended up happening is we were starting to just kind of think about selling. We weren't quite there yet. We were about at our 10-year mark. There were five of us. One of our partners wanted to get out. So nothing happened, like no disability, no traumatic event. But she shows up one day and says, I want out.
Trigger.
Thank the Lord. We talked about this.
Yes.
We talked about, okay. So we talked about what's going to happen if one of the partners wants to be out of the partnership, how we're going to go about, like, how are we going to determine what it's going to cost and how much that person's going to get. We have to bring appraisers in, right? It's hard for me even to come up with the language because it was so foreign to me. But you know what? We talked about it, and it ended up being emotional, but fairly straightforward, because we had a plan. If any one person at any one time wants to get out, here are the four steps that we're going to take. Okay. And that's what happened, even though it was emotional.
So yeah, it's, you say,
go ahead, Link.
you say, Carlene, you know how emotional that was. And yet there, if you don't plan, there's emotion on the other side too, because like I said, this has been a family business. And when Mike's dad came down with cancer and passed away 4 years ago, none of this had been, you know, dealt with. And so you're dealing with the death, you're dealing with, you know, that process and the legalities and everything of it. And that's emotional too, on top of the death or the injury or the, you know, disability or the loss, whatever it is. So there's emotion either way.
Yeah.
And so I don't know, I guess I'm kind of one of those, let's take the bull by the horns and take care of it now so we don't have to do it later. And so I really appreciated that, you know, that was part of the planning, because I've experienced it not really being part of the planning, you know, and how are you going to roll that over? Thank goodness we didn't have a bunch of employees. It's,
yeah.
It's all, you know, in the family, but it could have been,
We're humans. We're always going to have emotion. The process of when, and the emotions you go through when you're planning or pre-planning are a lot less stressful than crisis planning, you know, because not only are you dealing with the crisis, you're dealing with your emotions and then the expense of it, because everything costs more in a crisis. It's like going grocery shopping at 7-Eleven. You can do it, but it's going to be really expensive. So, you know, the thing that we're not going to get away from is being human beings with emotions.
Yeah. At least set yourself up so that you can have them.
Yes.
Because that's what we do, right? We like, especially those of us who are like in charge of stuff, we know how to be like, okay, well, that's a horrible thing. Someone just died. Yes. And, you know, and everyone's falling out, and I'm just going to keep myself all collected, and I'm going to get us through this. And then, you know, we get through the crisis, and then we have to have all of the emotions on the other side. And so oftentimes those are all compounded by that time. And so I love the idea.
Your body. I mean, you start, it's a chain effect.
Yeah.
Chain reaction.
Absolutely. Well, do any of you have any questions for Janice before we?
I do have a comment. I don't have businesses, but I was thinking about in our family, my kids grew up with, I'll say it professionally, there is suffering in every choice.
Oh, it's come either on.
Up front or behind. So choose your suffering.
Suffering.
Suffering. There's suffering in every choice. And for a quick example, okay, just what you were talking about, Carlin, there was suffering up front. If you choose that, you kind of know what your suffering is. If you say, I'm going to put off my suffering, I don't want to deal with that. The suffering is intense, comes at you from all different directions and at the most inopportune moment. And so that's a statement around my house all the time. My husband will tell him, huh, choose your suffering, because it's in there. And so the key to life is learning to choose your suffering.
Yeah.
Bargain with the future now. Just do it.
Absolutely.
And I thoroughly enjoyed the book, even though I didn't have businesses to deal with. But, you know, just I love, what is the word, cleverness, or I love that. And the fact that you took this intense subject and framed it in conversations and it was just brilliant. I thought it was really, really brilliant.
Thank you. Well, I have to tell you, it's just brilliant working with Amanda, because I love the way that we get to hear Grace's thoughts. You know, mm-hmm. Like, how cool is that? Oh, man, this is awesome. Because the thoughts that she had are the thoughts that business owners have. And when they sit with professionals, they're not going to just blurt out, oh my gosh, I'm so afraid of this. You know, it's just not going to happen. You know, and just to be able to, I loved how that was added in with her thoughts.
normalize it.
Amanda's like, what is she thinking? I'm like, oh, let me tell you what she's thinking, because I know, you know. And to be able to add that so that the business owner or the reader can go, that's probably what I would be thinking.
Yeah, it normalizes it. And I also wonder if it will help people in your industry who are a little bit further into the transactions of things remember that these are humans having really big emotions, talking about the big D's and the possibilities. And so hopefully that'll be supportive too.
I really hope so. I will be speaking at, I was asked to speak at my, for my industry next week. And I kind of shifted the title, the topic to, you know, really helping our business owners get to this decision, leaving in style and helping business owners. But I attended a advanced planning. I attended a training in March last month in San Diego. I think, they all blend together sometime this year. And the first speaker was so in the weeds. And I've been in this space for almost 20 years. I was like, my eyes are glazing over, you know. And yes, you're talking to other industry professionals, but the whole idea is to try to introduce advisors to this concept so that they can help business owners. And he was so deep in the weeds. I was looking around and, it was like he's speaking English, but I don't know what he's saying. So how does someone that's that deep into a concept come up for air and talk to human beings, business owners? You know, we're not there to dazzle you with brilliance. At least I'm not. I'm there to help people. And how can I help you when I just yanked you by the collar and dragged you down into 1,000-foot level of water? You know, it just makes no sense. So that is the message that I will be screaming from the rafters in my industry, is use this book to bring the conversation and meet them where they are. And allow for the emotion, expect the emotion, understand the emotion, because it's not about a process or a product. It's about people. Meet them where they are.
Yeah. I think that is the perfect place to wrap this conversation. It's all the synchronicity of what happened this week and all the things. So we're just going to, so thank you, Janice, for not giving up on the dream of making this digestible for the people who need it.
Thank you for not giving up on me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So I want to thank all of you for being here today. Thank those of us, those are the people viewing and listening, for hanging out with us during this episode. Remind them that if you like what you heard, please consider subscribing or leaving us a review, and maybe even sharing your own moment of like, maybe I should be planning for something like before it's a crisis. That's a wrap.
What's the name of your book? What's the name of your book, and where can we find it?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
It is Leaving in Style, Business Succession on Your Terms. And it can be found both on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
And if we need to get in touch with you,
you can reach me at Janice, J-A-N-I-S-E, at LeavingInStyle.com. And if you're a business owner and you want to connect on LinkedIn, Janice Graham on LinkedIn.
All righty.
Thanks, Teddy. All right, y'all. Thank you. And I guess we're done for today. That's a wrap.
I like everything that. Just started falling apart.